And now it's time for Archer Art. Despite possessing no skill in painting, sculpture, or anything to do with his hands, Arthur Smith, hitherto known only as a semi-professional comedian, has created his own art movement. Through this prism, Arthur now presents his own history and theory of Western representation, Archer Art.
Knock, knock. Ike. I claim only to live to the full the contradiction of my time, which may make irony a condition of truth. As you listen to this lecture, I invite you to bear in mind the words of the art historian Arnold Brown when he said, "Anything you do not understand this evening, please regard as significant." As I lay on my chaise longue one afternoon last week, smoking opium and ruminating on Chagall, I listened to this song by South African band Ladysmith Black Mbazo, and suddenly my understanding was reconfigured. I realised the band was paying tribute to me. Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith. I heard afresh, just as we shall see afresh. Welcome to the Royal Academy of Fine and Contemporary Arts in the back bar of the Bedford Pub in Balham, South London. You have come here tonight, and rightly so. Each Archer Art lecture will start with introductory remarks, which in turn start with these remarks introducing what I am about to say. I am joined by Archer Art historian, compliance officer, and former newsreader, Phil Nice.
Coming up on Archer Art 1, a visit to the oldest man-made image in Britain, a radical young artist, the truth about Van Gogh's ear, and the unfathomable world of Dada. Wet beat, liver, Plymouth Argyle.
Archer Art is a counter-insurgency movement against the repression of laughter in art. Begun at a gallery at the Edinburgh Fringe, Archer Art is a gorgeous and grubby hybrid of comedy and laughter. A man goes to the doctor for his annual checkup. The doctor says, "Well, I'm afraid you're going to have to stop masturbating." "Oh, no," says the man. "Why?" "Well," says the doctor, "I'm trying to examine you." That is the sound of laughter. And this is the sound of the Mona Lisa, the most famous painting in the world. They appear to have nothing in common. The art world has long been afeard of laughter. For the aficionado in the art houses of the world, chasing a chuckle to relieve the diet of religious pain and martyrdom, there's bugger all. The Sistine Chapel, an awesome sight, but laughs, nothing, zilch. The Venus de Milo's arms have fallen off, a titter at most. The Cavalier's laughing, but I'm not. Look at Picasso's portraits. Why the long faces? If you giggle in the National Gallery, you will get the kind of look as if you entered a vegetarian restaurant and started clubbing a seal to death. But why is the Mona Lisa smiling? When he painted her, was Leonardo da Vinci wearing funny false ears? There are many talented young artists in the world today, and at my time of life, I find that disgusting. Perhaps I'm too old to start on art. I've arrived at an age where I'm able to convince young people that I was actually in the Second World War. As far as my 18-year-old niece is concerned, I was parachuted into occupied France in 1944, where I worked undercover for 6 months in a village near Lyon, posing as Jacques the Boulanger. Escaping from the Gestapo, I began my career in comedy at the Edinburgh Fringe. So I decided to seek out a youthful artist and thinker to help me navigate my way through the postmodern pattery of this new millennium. The woman I chose is full of insight, eloquent and witty. However, she was unavailable. So please welcome my new assistant, Miriam Elia. I believe your parents are artists.
Yeah, they didn't know what to call me when I was a kid, so it was just untitled.
Miriam is a graduate of the Royal School of Art, aren't you, Miriam?
Yes, I was thrown out for my poster that said, Hitler couldn't get into art school, but you can.
And therefore, I have asked Miriam to prepare a glossary of art school expressions.
I'm thinking outside of the box.
What's in the box? Help me.
Juxtaposition. It's a juxtaposition between light and dark, because there's a metaphorical juxtaposition between my work and contemporary Western society.
I put two things next to each other.
I'm pushing boundaries.
I've taken more drugs than everyone in this room.
I mean, are we really living in a democracy? Is this really freedom?
I've read Chomsky.
Frankly, I find your work generic.
You can actually draw. I feel threatened.
I'm in early stages. I'm kind of still working with concepts.
I haven't done anything yet.
I'm dealing with the metaphysical.
Will anyone here sleep with me?
The final installation's going to be 40 foot high.
I have a small penis.
I think it's shallow.
Your work can't be good because I understand it.
There's a real feeling of disrupted narrative in your work.
This doesn't make any sense. I won't tell you that because it might trigger another breakdown and we need your autumn term foreign student fees. But enough of modernity. Let us consider the beginnings of art.
Do we have to?
Yes, we do. Let us visit the first furnaces of creativity. Let us travel back, back,
back, back.
Yes, back, back!
Back to the dawn of time itself.
There is no art, nothing. There are merely heavenly bodies expanding at a furious rate.
Nigellas. But let us not linger in this inhuman universe, but move forward.
Forward! Forward!
Forward 13 and a half billion years to a time when the Earth has cooled down and human beings have appeared.
Forward! Forward!
No, we're staying still now, Miriam, thank you. Look, we are in a cave near a place that is known as Worksop. More specifically, we are in a cave in Cresswell.
Inside stands a primitive creature swathed in animal skins to protect him against the cold. He is hunched, grunting, animated.
It is Arthur Smith.
It is indeed, and I am with a fellow big-brained biped in the shape of Dr. Paul Barn, expert on prehistoric art, archaeologist, author and adventurer, like Indiana Jones in corduroy trousers. Well, Paul Barn, the leading expert on cave art in Britain, has brought me here to Cresswell Crags, where I'm going to see some work that may have been done by my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddad. Oh, I missed a couple of greats. Let's go through the very moment that you found it.
We came in here and we went through the entrance chamber. The lighting was very bad as it is now and we couldn't really see anything. So we then went down the back of the cave and down there we made our first discoveries of definite engravings on the wall. As we came and took a closer look at these lines that looked mysterious from down below, we finally figured out that in fact this is an animal about half a metre long. Start here. This is the eye. This natural hole is the eye.
Yeah, I see.
So they put an ear here.
Yeah, I see the ear.
The
yeah.
antlers are going up like that.
Yeah.
Here's the forehead and the jaw.
Yeah.
And then the neck comes all the way down here.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
But essentially, there it is. It's a stag about half a metre long. Very beautiful image.
And yeah, it has an air of being done quite quickly and elegantly.
That's right. That's right. Beautiful proportions. No hesitation. No fluffed lines, everything is perfect.
And you think there may have been colours at the time?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, certainly they were painting in other caves, and we have indications that all of the bas-reliefs in other caves in France were painted originally, So I think it's extremely likely that the images in this cave were painted originally too. So I think the whole ceiling was probably decorated, the walls. It would have been a very, very colourful place to be.
This is genuinely like an art gallery then?
So it could be an art gallery, as you say, though there are many possible explanations for why you have a great collection of images in here and not in the other caves.
Yeah, so this must have been a fundamental change in things then.
Yeah, I mean, every book on British archaeology now has to be changed because we have Ice Age art in Britain. We've got cave art in Britain before there wasn't any, and so this has changed the prehistory of Britain.
And that was the first morning of your search?
First morning of the search, yeah.
I mean, it's incredible to think that this person has sent this message across 13,000 years. To be honest, I could have done better myself, I think, actually. I think the leg's a bit wonky. Come on, let's have a look at some more then.
Okay. This is definitely engraved. This is a leg of what seems to be a horse.
See, if they'd done abstract work, you would never know, really, would you?
Well, a lot of the what we call signs are abstract and we can't read them. What we have got in this cave is a number of triangles, which sometimes with a line in the middle and sometimes not. And the French call all of these triangles vulvas. I think some of them may be. I don't think all of them necessarily are. Vulvas.
What? Why do they call them that?
Because that's what the French think they are.
Oh, I see. As in vulva, right.
Yeah, so there are two over here for a start. There's one there, if I can light it properly. You've got a triangle here.
So really these are sort of in praise of female...
Could be. Another one here.
Well, it would be. The French would say that, that's
what. Yeah.
See, all these dirty cave paintings. I mean, they're spit-smutty, frankly. I think I should close them down, some of these naked women. These vulvas, I don't know what's going on. I'm going to have a word with the council, Cresswell Council, get this all this closed down and sealed off. It's disgusting. The cavemen died out like the Neanderthals, or rather evolved backwards into heavy metal bands. And so to Plato. Miriam, tell us about the art of the Greeks.
Naked men. I don't know.
Did you really go to the Royal College of Art, Miriam?
I did graphics.
Oh, well, that explains it. And on, past the Egyptians, who painted flatly with some yellow, to Roman art, which revived the knob joke in spectacular fashion.
If you were Jonathan Ross, you will delight in the art found and preserved in 79 AD Pompeii.
Depictions of Priapus, Roman god of fertility, weighing his own enormous erection with a big smile on his face. As well he might. And his mate Pan having vigorous sex with a goat.
What did the everyday Roman make of this?
Dirty smut, that's what.
When the Romans departed Britain, the medieval party got in and didn't lose an election for 1,000 years. We're whipping through this, aren't we? In this era, rolling news was invented in the shape of the Bayeux tapestry.
At one end of the tapestry, modern scholars have noticed a Latin phrase that translates as...
Breaking news. King Harold shot in the eye. Sport. Tim Henman loses in semi-final.
I'm reminded of one of my own works, an embroidery bearing the legend, Life is too short for embroid.
Humour was important to these people with their short, brutish lives. To the king, too. Henry II gave an estate with 30,000 acres to a character called Roland the Farter.
It's true, this. In return for this, every Christmas, Roland was required by the king to perform a leap, a whistle and a fart. And it strikes me that this is a routine that would still work. And so, Phil will now recreate Roland's legendary entrance. The best art gag in these times were the gargoyles used to disguise water spouts, associated especially with the Middle Ages, cf. The hideous stone creatures that adorn Notre Dame in Paris.
And is this a coincidence? Gargoyles? Chris Moyles?
It is, isn't it?
Ooh!
Phil is now doing an impression of a gargoyle. The audience here can see the mask Phil has put on. The rest of you may have the pleasure of imagining it. It is grotesque. He looks exactly like Andrew Lloyd Webber. As we all do some mornings. Some of my own Archer Art pictures are influenced by the spirit of the gargoyle and include my own coruscating series about Winnie the Pooh, in which Pooh eats too much honey, contracts type 2 diabetes, grows genitals, hitchhikes to Afghanistan, where he is captured by the Americans and suffers waterboarding in Guantanamo Bay. And is it a coincidence, since I exhibited that, Guantanamo Bay is going to be closed? Yes, it is. We're standing outside the British Museum, repository of some of the great works of art, of architecture, the foundations of civilization. I have with me Miriam, who I am instructing in the ways of Archer Art. We've had a small problem about going round.
We weren't allowed in.
We're not allowed in. So we're standing outside. But there's lots of things to look at from here, because art is everywhere, Miriam.
Yes, it is, Arthur. It surrounds us.
Now, looking at the British Museum itself, I think it's somehow based on the Parthenon, isn't it?
Yeah.
The point being that most of what we understand in Western art has come from antiquity, from classical civilization. Mm-hmm. Even though it was transformed through the Renaissance, that is how we understand the world. That is how we perceive each other. All these people milling around here are a result of Plato, of Nebuchadnezzar.
An EasyJet.
Miriam, what we have learnt here is one of the fundamental things we need to understand about the very nature of humanity and art within it, and that is...
Excuse me, can I ask you, do you have permission to record here?
Well, no.
You need permission to record here.
Arthur, we
you have to go
permission.
To the press office.
All right, sod you then. Yeah. Come on, let's go. I'm bored with the British Museum now. Shall we move on somewhere?
Yeah, it's a bit retro.
And now, it is time for Artist of the Week. Artist of the Week. Number 73, Vincent van Gogh. There are many clichés and half-baked notions about Vincent van Gogh, and it is my intention to repeat them all here. The first problem in talking about the Dutch artist is actually saying his name.
Americans call him Van Gogh.
We say Van Gogh. It is neither. Fellow art historian Bill Bryson describes a Dutchman saying it.
He made a sudden series of desperate hacking noises, as if a moth had lodged in his throat.
We obviously need a proper Dutch person here.
And we have one, I believe, in the shape of Carla de Vee. Carla, give Carla a round of applause. Now, Carla, can you confirm you are a proper Dutch person?
I will. Mijn naam is Carla. Ik kom oorspronkelijk uit Utrecht en dat ligt in Nederland. You're welcome.
No ad-libbing, please, Carla. She was just sitting home doing something last night. I didn't get her till last night. She was just planning a quiet Sunday in. Anyway, right, OK. I want you now, Carla, to say the name of the great Dutch artist.
Van Gogh.
And since we've paid your tune fare here...
You didn't, actually.
Oh, did I? Okay. I'm going to ask you, actually, to say two other words in Dutch, just because it muses me.
Okay.
And the two we've got are, first of all, what is the Dutch for toolbox?
Gereedschapskist.
That is stupid. And now the Dutch for orange juice.
Sinaasappelsap.
I hope this isn't racist. A round of applause for Carla. Vincent Sunflowers sold for $53 million in 1987, and yet, as every schoolboy used to know, no schoolboy knows anything now, during his lifetime, he only ever sold one picture, and that for the modern equivalent of £12.99.
He gave many away. So appalled were his contemporaries by his style that two canvases were used as chip pans in a kebab shop in Amsterdam.
He can still confuse people. In 1965, for a few weeks, the National Gallery exhibited Van Gogh... long grass with butterflies upside down.
In 1885, Van Gogh... was living in Paris and hanging out with fellow artists like Gauguin, Pissarro, and I think my research is a bit wrong here, Mao Zedong. He lived, as all artists were required to at the time, in Montmartre. And these days, that is the area to which all tourists go. Or rather, Gogh.
And here is what I love about Van Gogh. He was skint, pissed, and bonkers.
His paintings throb with wild, vibrant yellows and blues, just as his head throbbed with absinthe hangovers every morning. And his brain throbbed with the madness that pursued him to his grave.
The question is, did his madness create his genius, or did his genius create the madness? Or were they the same thing? Here are some facts about Vincent van Gogh.
All of them are true,
apart from the fourth one.
He had a brother called Vincent, born exactly a year before him, who died.
He once taught languages in a school in Ramsgate.
He didn't cut his ear off, more a bit of a lobe.
For one season, he played inside right for Leighton Orient.
When his second lover, a distant cousin, spurned him, he went to see her parents and terrified them by holding his hand over a gas lamp, saying he would not leave while the lamp burned. Her father blew it out and he left.
And so the seeds were sown for the blossoming of postmodernism.
Archer Art Manifesto, number 39.
Morris dancing is art under extreme circumstances.
No, Gloria Gaynor, you will not survive. You will die along with everyone else.
Never wear pink at a war crimes trial.
We endorse the words of Lothian Council. Tuesdays and Fridays are rubbish days. The Archer Art take on visual representation is indeed informed by the provocative spirit of Dada.
But what is Dada?
But what is Dadaism, I hear you ask. Dada, as it is also known if you take the ism off, was an idea dreamed up in the Café Voltaire in 1916 in neutral Zurich by a bunch of artists reacting against the slaughter of the First World War and the certainties of the art that preceded it. This is a poem by the Berlin Dadaist Karl Kurt Schwitters, written in 1920. Phil's going to do it, therefore, in a bit of a German accent. It's called What a Bee, What a Bee, What a Beauty. This is a real Dadaist poem from 1920. Good luck, Phil.
What a bee, what a bee, what a beauty. What a bee, what a bee, what a, what a beauty, beauty bee. What a beauty, beauty bee. What a beauty, beauty, beauty bee, bee, bee. What a bee, what a bee, what a beauty. What a bee, what a bee, what a, what a bee, 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 bee. Oh, this is garbage, aren't it?
Dada, a word chosen at random, was a movement rooted in the absurd, the arbitrary, ideas which, when confronted with the... Oh! Oh, my God! The tiger has broken into the pub! Oh, it's coming out!
To those of you listening at home, in the interest of transparency and in accordance with the new era of honesty in the media, we have to confess now that although there was a tiger,
It is a large cuddly toy bought off the internet for £49.99.
In truth, you probably didn't think there was a real tiger. In these days of health and safety, tigers, like cigarettes, are no longer permitted in pubs. You will have noticed, too, that the audience here did not react in the way you would expect it if it had really happened. Indeed, some of you were laughing. Hello there. To those of you listening on radio or computer, I will now let you into a secret. The people watching my lecture that night didn't know, but I did, that the right forms had been completed and a real live tiger, and a hungry one at that, was about to be released into the back room of the Bedford Arms.
Let's sit back and enjoy the sound of 150 people being terrified and a couple of them actually being eaten.
There are two crucial things to remember about Dada.
I am 5'2".
It revelled in repetition in the arbitrary.
And it was unpredictable, just as life... Oh! This doesn't happen at just a minute. And so, Dada came to pass, and alternative comedy was born.
As Timmy Mallett once said, you need chaos to give birth to a dancing star.
The old repeat themselves, the young have nothing to say. The boredom is mutual.
The old repeat themselves, the young have nothing to say. The boredom is mutual.
What the world really needs now are geniuses who are also possessing humility. Because, alas, there are so few of us left. Are there any questions so far?
And that is the end of the introductory remarks.
When leaving the pub, please make sure you take all your possessions with you. Good night.
Archerart was written and presented by Arthur Smith, with additional material written and performed by Miriam Alia and Phil Nikes. The arts correspondent was Dominic Druce. Arthur Smith's wardrobe was by Simon Pierce. Original music was by Chris O'Shaughnessy. And the producer was Andy Foster. Archerart was a White Pebble Media production for BBC Radio 4.